This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 380. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Bombshells versus Nazi zombies, Superman's future role comes to a head, the Dark Knight knocks thrice, let's have a picnic on Europa, and a middle-aged schlub gets jacked. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, November 29th, 2015. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
You can email at sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. DC Comics Bombshells number 5 by Bennett, Doyle, Adolfo, Evely, Garbark, and Broom. So the storyline seems to be moving forward again.
It's moving forward again, but it's still very piecemeal.
Yeah, absolutely. So Batwoman, remember her, has now made it to Berlin, where she's escorted to Selina Degati's party by Alexander Luthor. And he warns her to be careful around Selina. But after a brief tete-a-tete between Kane and Degati, the party really begins with Brother Knight reanimating a dead Nazi soldier, and he has plans for a whole undead army.
Now, is this woman who was there the same one that was in the nightclub before?
Might have been.
Okay.
I'm not sure. It's been, again, also piecemeal. Harley runs into Ivy, of course, and the latter is a black market smuggler. There's a fight with more undead Nazis there. Meanwhile, Supergirl and Stargirl free the prisoners in the labor camp and then go to save their parents. But the Ruskies are one step ahead of them, telling them to rejoin the army or the parents die. Mom magically calls up this woodland creature that looks a lot like Swamp Thing.
Well, and in fact, it's called Swamp Thing, so.
Allowing Mom and the girls to escape, but Arkin took Dad via plane. And as you said, the overall plot really still needs to come together.
In books like this, sometimes I like it better if they tell more of one story in a book, and then the next book is the other story, rather than running five books with pieces of five stories. I'd rather see five stories in their own books.
It's like they're spinning plates.
Yeah.
And just trying to keep them going, each storyline, but just enough. Justice League 3001, number 6 by Giffen, DeMatteis, Doran, and Hi-Fi. So the young girl with the Batman robot, Tina Sung, is taken in by Batman and Supergirl. But the prison warden won't take her because she lives on Takrin Galtos, a.k.a. Earth, by choice. And it turns out she was born there. Oh, and she's the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter of Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Batman decides to take her back to Camelot 9, but Harley is waiting for them outside. She and this girl have been playing Batman and Harley for years, but Sung has now decided to really be a hero. Two very polite robots break things up. I'm thinking, and I can't remember their names, but the Warner Brothers squirrels. After you. They start duking it out with the heroes, and we learn that the robots can regenerate. Meanwhile, Superman gets a distress call after Ronald the Robot explains the idea of a distress call to him.
Because he never checks his email.
Because he's an idiot. More fighting ensues, and we learn the robots are also destroying Cadmus' world, which we know will throw the galaxy into chaos because even though they've taken over everything, they're at least keeping the trains running on time, as it were. The rest of the heroes arrive, and then we watch the robots blow Superman's head off over several panels. Well, it's not really Superman, we know that. And Giffen, in a recent interview, said he is updating the team to make it an all-female force. And there's only Batman left as a male at this point. And there's a female version of Batman in the wings.
Yeah.
So they really only have to make one more switch. But I think that it doesn't bode well for the male Batman. I'm guessing next issue he's going to get it.
Well, my only complaint about this book is, where is Booster Gold and Blue Beetle?
Yeah, yeah, I know.
I was promised Booster Gold and Blue Beetle.
According to at least a picture of a future solicitation of the title, Fire and Ice are going to join this group. Now, hopefully, then that'll pull in Booster and Beetle. We'll see. Dark Knight 3, The Master Race, Book 1, by Miller, Azzarello, Kubert, Jansen, Anderson, and Robbins. After a long delay, the third volume of Frank Miller's opus begins. Batman is gone, he's become a legend, and we're now following kids texting each other, one of whom says he's seen the Bat. We cut to Miller's standard gimmick that shows media coverage about, is Batman back? We see these little TV screens, and he mocks Fox News, Kelly and Michael, The O'Reilly Factor, and Jon Stewart, which I kind of liked.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Yindle is still on the job. However, she's being told what to say about the Bat by a PR person. And then we cut to a jungle tribe under attack by a Minotaur, and Wonder Woman takes out the Minotaur. She returns to a jungle version of Paradise Island. Didn't quite understand that.
Mm-hmm.
With her son Jonathan on her back. And her daughter Lara is gone again. Now, if you know DC history and those names, it becomes very quickly obvious who the baby daddy is.
Yes.
Lara is up at the fortress checking on Cal, who's locked in ice. I didn't quite understand that. Is he depowered and locked in ice? Is he in suspended animation?
Yeah, maybe he was injured and so they froze him so they can like cure him later or something.
Right. But we know he's going to be a character in this title. So she sees a distress call from Kandor where they're burning the words "help us" on the side of the glass bottle for the bottled city of Kandor. Back to Gotham, and Batman is somehow on the loose again. The cops track him down, start beating the crap out of him. Message coming in, sir. The cowl is yanked off, and it's Carrie Kelly, the Robin of this universe, and she tells them Bruce Wayne is dead. The artwork is great, the story is quite interesting, but it does seem to be more of the same.
Well, that's pretty much what the fans want, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose. There's also a mini book glued inside the main book.
Now, see, I thought that was a really interesting way to do it rather than just making it extra pages.
Mm-hmm. Of course, it makes the book itself a little unwieldy physically, but I do like the idea. And this one tells us what happened to the Atom. He gives us some backstory about the JLA. He thinks that the Trinity brought in the rest of the team because, quote, Justice Trinity bothered two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Lara has arrived, and because she's brought the bottled city, the Kandorians are tired of being small. And I guess if I wanted to fix that problem, I would go see Ray Palmer. Of course, the problem is this would lose an entire city of Kryptonians onto Earth. That's always been the issue about if you get the Kandorians out of the bottled city, what do you do with them then? Do they stay on Earth? Do they go into another planet? What's the deal?
Well, didn't they at one point in time do a little thing where they put them on another planet? And
well, there was the whole new Krypton thing. Yeah, back in mid-2000s.
Now, wouldn't they still have superpowers inside the bottle on Earth, or are they shielded from the yellow sun?
Traditionally, they're shielded, and they have like this artificial red sun there. But in this case, it's not clear how they're burning the words "help us," which it would be giant letters to them. I don't know if they're doing it via heat vision or some sort of beam.
Large lasers.
Lasers, I guess.
That etch glass.
Yeah.
I would be afraid I'd break my bottle. What happens if they break the bottle?
It's not good.
Except that there's a guy wandering around outside the bottle right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, he apparently got... You can get out. There was this whole thing back in the Silver Age where you'd put a jet pack on, you'd go up to the giant cork, and then you'd push it out and then get out.
I'm rolling my eyes. For all of you who can't see me, I'm rolling my eyes.
As if you didn't guess, she's rolling her eyes. Jupiter's Circle Volume 2, Number 1 by Image by Millar, Torres, Svorzina, and Doherty. Mark Miller's dark Silver Age type saga begins a new chapter where Sheldon, aka Utopian, takes his wife Jane on a trip to Jupiter's moon Europa. And he's always doing great things for her. He handles the chores at super speed every morning. He makes her breakfast every day, bringing ingredients from around the world. Walks her to work in his secret identity. Takes her to dinner all around the world every night. Utopian finds this deserted underground city on Europa, along with a weird remote-like device.
Which, of course, he brings back with him.
Why not? Well, Grace, a.k.a. Lady Liberty, handles a color-based villain. And I love how he's like, I'm taking all the color away unless my demands are met. And so the pages go to black and white. While she's successful at being a hero, she can't seem to find a companion for her life. Jane and Grace have lunch and compare notes, and Jane tells Grace to just find a guy for a one-night stand. Grace normally spends her weekends reading on a deserted island. But in this case, she goes to Fleet Week and finds a sailor, but he chickens out at the end.
It's more like he, and I think she's experienced this before, he senses there's something wrong about her.
Right.
And so he doesn't consummate the date.
Right, he's like, I gotta go.
And she's saying, you know, this is what always happens. There's nothing she can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Utopian and Walter, a.k.a. Brainwave, compare notes on the remote, but have no idea what it is. I really enjoy the twisted Silver Age concept here. It's like dark Silver Age, kind of the flip side of Astro City in a way.
I do like this book a lot, and especially as compared to the next one you're going to talk about. So,
well, and what's interesting is this is a spinoff of Jupiter's Legacy, which frankly I didn't like as much as this one.
And that was the one about the kids,
the
right?
The kids of these heroes.
Yes.
And how they're just kind of slackers. Jacked, Number 1 of 6 from Vertigo by Kripke and Higgins. Another of Vertigo's new crop of titles is heard from. And this is kind of a new concept because if you look into the origin of most comic book heroes, they tend to take a young man or woman who gained mysterious powers and then use those powers instinctively for good. And not in this case. Meet Josh, a single-aged man who has a lackluster marriage and multiple middle-aged maladies. He's got a bad back and a bad knee and acid reflux and all these problems. And he basically hates his life and knows his family is disappointed in him. His brother is a dentist who tells him to try out some new quasi-legal pills called nootropics. And they're apparently better than energy pills. And he waves it off, but then later realizes, I got to do something. I'm desperate. So he goes online and he picks out a brand called Jacked. And later, he's with his son at the batting cages when the drugs kick in. And he's tripping, and it's all very psychedelic, and he can't handle it. And while he is tripping, without noticing it, he mangles this steel pole behind him. And then trying to make it home, he sees a truck slam into a car. And for some reason, where normally he would run away, he runs into the danger, rips the door off the car, and pulls the driver out. And throughout all this, he realizes his maladies are gone. One of the quotes is, oh my God, my back feels terrific.
Yeah.
A paramedic says he didn't pull off the door. It must have been already damaged. But his son is proud anyways of his dad. We then cut to previews of the rest of the miniseries, which look very violent and bloody. And it sounds like this won't end well.
See, and in this instance, this book, it's like the artist has drawn it to be gross.
Yes. It's very gritty. It's very like, hey, look at all the pores on this guy. And,
yeah, it's,
you know,
not my cup of tea, I got to tell you.
The artwork is a little off-putting, I have to say. The concept is really interesting, but not so much the artwork. Now, before we get out of here, it's time to play your America's Fastest Growing New Game Show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Are you ready, Mark?
I am ready.
Okay, I'm pressing the button.
TV related?
No.
Movie related?
Sort of.
Is it some list issue?
No.
Okay, is one person on the cover?
Yes.
Okay, so it's somebody who's done movies and other stuff?
Mostly movies.
Okay. Well, they do their Entertainer of the Year thing around now, don't they?
They do.
Ah, so, okay. So, is it a man?
No.
It's a woman?
Yes.
A woman under 30?
Yes.
Under 20?
No.
Okay. Well, female in her 20s, mostly known for movies.
Yes.
Known for, like, tentpole type movies?
I would say yes.
Okay. Has she won awards?
Yes.
Has she won Oscars?
Yes. I think she won an Oscar. I'm pretty sure she did.
Is it Jennifer Lawrence?
It is.
Oh, hey.
Woohoo, that was quick. In a minute, Mark. And I think she won for Winter's Bone.
Yeah, she did.
So there you go. Jennifer Lawrence, EW's Entertainer of the Year.
All right. Want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
Email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn. Call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.